This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik. It's our monthly open clinic show today, our Ask a Doctor segment. And the doctor joining me on the show to do just this is Associate Professor Dr. Nick Sharina Hanafi, a primary care physician. And she will be answering your questions about health checkups. You know, we hear so much about the importance of going for health or medical checkups. There are so many screening tests that are offered commercially, as well as in government healthcare facilities. Now, the question, a lot of people are wondering then, you know, what tests do I need? At what age should I do it? Perhaps how often? And, what's the use of doing these tests? Well, Dr. Sharina will be here to answer these questions for you. So how you can get your questions in, you can WhatsApp them over to us at 018-789-8899. You can also call us at 03-773-2900, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. And Dr. Nick, thank you so much for joining me today. How are you?
Hi, Shoaik. I'm fine, thank you very much.
And thanks for the invitation. Yes, absolutely. If I'm not mistaken, because I know I spoke to you, time flies, it was a few weeks, I want to say, maybe a month or two ago, about hypertension. Are you still the president of the Malaysia Society of Hypertension?
Yes, I am, Shoaik.
Yes. So to our listeners, you know, Dr. Sharina can also answer questions related to, you know, getting your blood pressure tested, if you have been checking them, and if you have questions or doubts about the kinds of readings that you're getting. Again, the number to call, 03-773-2900. You can also WhatsApp 018-789-8899. I think just to make sure we're all on the same page first, Dr. Sharina, perhaps you can explain what exactly are health or medical checkups.
Right. Okay, thank you. That's a good point to start off. Well, you know the saying that health is wealth. So it's very good for us to know what is our health status. So rather than wait for a disease to come on and suddenly get hit by the news that you have a condition you're not prepared for, it is good to know where you are in terms of the health status. So when That means you do certain tests, you approach certain maybe healthcare practitioners, doctors, to see whether you are at risk or if you are having certain conditions. So generally, that's what we mean by screening or health checkups, as opposed to having a symptom. For example, you already have a cough. You want to know what's wrong with you. So you go to a doctor. Now, that's not a health checkup. That's essentially going in for a diagnosis.
Mm. And when you have a symptom or some sort of a problem, whatever tests that necessitate is just part of that diagnostic process, right?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yes.
But the whole point of going for these health checkups is a preventive measure. It's when you are, even if you're not feeling unwell, if you're not displaying signs or symptoms, it's good to sort of know where you are in terms of your health status.
That's the best time, really, when you are well. So that's the idea for a checkup. You're well, so you want to know whether you could be having certain conditions. For example, you may know that your family member has a certain condition and you're wondering, would I be at risk of getting this either now or years later on? So while you're well, while you still can, you know, participate or take care in your health decision making, then that's time for you to go and have a checkup.
Mm. A lot of these diseases are silent as well, and you can't afford to wait for problems or symptoms to develop before you actually find out whether you have them or are at risk of them. Isn't that right?
Yes, that's very true. Very right.
So what we did was, while we are waiting for our listeners to either send their questions in or to call in, we also did ask our trusty interns, Ida and Naomi, to go out with a recorder and ask some people on the street whether they had questions as well. So I'll be playing some of these questions throughout today. And I'd like to start with one by Sabrina right here.
My name is Sabrina. So how do I know what kind of health checkup to go for? Like, should I go for the basic one first? Because there's all these very specific kind of things I need to think about. Or do I go for the full on, like, figure everything out at once?
Yep. So that question again, right, is just the most basic ones. Even then, like, what exactly does basic mean? Or do you throw in everything in the kitchen sink in a test, in a checkout?
Okay. Yeah. Well, it's easy to throw in everything in a kitchen sink, but it may not be the best, most effective way. So ideally, what would work best is really to know your family history. Okay, for example, if you know that your parents or your siblings, or if you have children, that's not so applicable. But if your siblings, your parents have certain conditions, then you say that's a very good starting point. And then you may want to go and seek certain tests for it. Then again, we go for age. If you're young, then there are only certain conditions that it's worth testing for. For example, that would be more for lifestyle-related conditions. If you're in a slightly older age group, let's say you're 50-ish, then you might want to screen for certain conditions that are more common in that age group. If you fall into the older age group, for example, above 65, then again, there are certain conditions. So I would say that, yes, the full medical checkup is available, but it may not be the most effective in that true sense.
Mm. And when it comes to these different age groups, is it possible to ask for some specificity? Because on Instagram, IE Mict is asking, you know, what are the additional tests other than the basic, you know, what you would get in a normal blood panel? What additional tests would be important going by age group? So you've already alluded that in your 20s, or if you're above 50, if above 65, there are different things to consider.
Right. So let's start at a very basic starting point where you would actually want to consult a doctor, a healthcare practitioner, whereby the doctor will be able to ask you certain questions. Do you smoke? Do you drink? How's your exercise habits? You know, and then as I've mentioned before, then he or she will take your family history and then carry on the assessment at what are you at risk of. And then we go on to what we call as physical examination. The doctor may then actually check your height and your weight to kind of know what's your BMI level. Because as we know, BMI is quite important and can tell someone whether you're at risk of getting certain conditions. Going back to that lifestyle behavior that I mentioned before, as we know, you know, when you're 20s, 30s, that's a time when life can be a bit stressful and you may not have time to exercise. You may resort to certain behaviors. For example, you smoke, you drink, you may get involved in sexual activities. So based on what your lifestyle behavior is, then there are certain tests to be done.
All right. So the first step really is seeing a doctor first, whether it's your regular GP, for instance, any doctor that you do see. Is that right?
Yes, that would be a very good starting point. And I would strongly advocate everyone in this instance to have a regular doctor. He or she may be the one you've been seeing for many years. You're quite comfortable with this person. He or she can be in private practice, can be in the public, you know, public service, it doesn't matter. But it's good to have your health records known to someone or even at one particular place, you know. So as you go, as you age, then your certain risks for diseases changes with age. So, that's a good starting point. Get a regular doctor and stick with this person.
Mm. And what you've said is interesting because I do hear a lot of people saying, oh, I've checked out this place and that place and they offer these kinds of screening packages or that. And you know, that there are always a lot of questions around that in terms of which package or, you know, choice should I make because you're inundated, aren't you? But it really sounds like we're missing the very important first step, which is to talk to that doctor first.
Yes, because usually these packages, how it works would be you have all the tests done and it's a panel of tests. And perhaps we can touch on it a bit later, but some tests may not be appropriate for you. This is where the terms such as false positive, false negative comes in. You know, we do have certain tests which are not actually suitable for screening. They're meant to be diagnosing a condition. They're meant to be monitoring a condition. But as it were, some of these tests are already in a panel. So it's offered as a package. I do agree with you, Xiaoyi, that it can be very confusing, you know, which test I would need. But that's why I would say, you know, start with a consultation and ask, what would I need? Even though at the end, if you get the full package, then you go in well informed, knowing that, all right, this is something that's not actually useful for me, but it's done anyway. And yeah. You can discuss about that. Yes.
Mm, absolutely. Mm-hmm. On Instagram again, Jin Wen had asked, are those general blood and urine tests effective to know our real health condition?
So it's blood and urine?
Yes. And I think it's those that you do find quite basic or standard in a panel, isn't it?
Yes. You'll be surprised at how many people have certain conditions without actually being aware of it. Okay. A simple test called the full blood count that measures your hemoglobin. Hemoglobin are actually red blood cells in your body. And when your hemoglobin goes down a certain value, then you have what we call as anemia. So you may not realize it, but I've come across many instances where people suddenly have anemia without knowing it. And it pays to really be aware of your health status. Say, okay, I have this. So essentially, a screening or a medical checkup will be able to tell you that you have a certain condition. And what's more importantly is, what do you do with it? What do you do about those news? Okay, so you can take some actions. You can, if necessary, you can have more tests. If that's all that you need, then you can do certain changes to your lifestyle that can help, hopefully, help influence the cause of the disease and manage it at an earlier stage.
And we have a question here on WhatsApp. Can you explain the difference between a one-off screening test and a screening program? Is there a difference?
Okay, so I suppose a screening program really depends on the party who made it. You know, a screening program can be can be continuous over time. We'll follow you up over a year or a five-year program. Sometimes it's meant to be a program catered in. If we pick up that you are obese, for example, then it comes in with exercise advice and so on and so forth. So it's a program. It's tailored to suit the issues that you have. But a one-off is when you have it done and tested at that point in time. So it then may not have certain management, certain programs attached to it. So it's really up to you then to work up what to do next with such results.
Mm. But
I suppose that's what it means.
But as a general rule, we are talking about these kinds of checkups that, you know, we can determine what's significant depending on our family history, right? Our age and what are our practices, whether we smoke and drink and all that. Then as a general rule, is there a need to do it every year? Like what we have been asking on Twitter and Instagram, our followers, you know, is it necessary to go for a medical checkup every year? And, you know, overwhelmingly, more than 80% of people think, yes, we do have to. So is that right?
Okay, so let's look at the disease profile that's common in Malaysia. As you know, I've mentioned before, hypertension is very common in Malaysia, diabetes as well. And as you know, amongst the Asian countries, Malaysia has the highest number of people who are obese. So let's just take those three. And let's say your parent has diabetes, yeah? So being at risk, you know, even from the age of 20, as early as that, we would advocate you to have a checkup every year because you are at risk. So then again, I stress upon this issue, this terms of at risk, high risk, low risk, yeah? So back to this person whose parent has diabetes and he or she knows that eventually he or she may get it. So do it every year. Now, when to do it is really up to you. I usually tell people do it on your birthday. So that's the best time to remember, you know, take a day off and go see your doctor on your birthday. Then you kind of remember when to do your health checkups.
Absolutely. Hopefully it's, you know, you don't, well, I want to say hopefully you don't get bad news on your birthday. But then again, you're doing this at a time when you can do something about it, right?
You're doing it for yourself.
Mm.
Yes. So whether it's good news or bad news is really on how you see it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yes, certainly some news are bad news, but hey, let's say that you have been, you know, taking a bit more food than what you need, and suddenly you realize your cholesterol have, you know, shot up and it's beyond the normal limit. So take a while, sit back and say, where am I going in this path towards, you know, health? So then you decide, you know, if you say, you know, I'm just going to enjoy my food as how I am now, so be it. That's fine. See how it is the next year. You know, and see what happens if you just go on doing what you're doing. But if you say, okay, it's time for me to wake up, I've got certain priorities in life and I'll do something about it. You change your eating habits, you start going for exercises, then lo and behold, perhaps next year your bad news will become good news.
Absolutely. Fantastic
way. And you treat
way.
Yourself. Yes, yeah. And you treat yourself to something nice.
That's a fantastic way to look at it. So we're going to continue this conversation. More questions have come in on WhatsApp. And we've got more lined up in those recordings that I mentioned as well. Associate Professor Dr. Nick Sherina Hanafi, primary care physician on Zoom. It's our Ask a Doctor segment about health checkups. So you can call us at 03-7733-2900. You can also WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be right back on Health and Living, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Ik, and my guest, Associate Professor Dr. Nick Sherina Hanafi, Primary Care Physician. It's our Ask a Doctor segment. We're discussing health checkups, the what, why, when, where, how, who. So Dr. Nick has already addressed quite a number of the more basic questions about what types, at what age, who, and what kind of aspects of your own life and health should you look at when you're considering going for a health checkup. And definitely, you know, it's something that all of us should be doing every year. And it's Dr. Sherina has the best advice. Schedule one every year on your birthday, and it puts you in control of your health, allows you to make decisions to change the course of things. And hopefully next year on your next birthday, you do your next checkup and you've got good news. So call us 03-7733-2900. You can also WhatsApp 018-789-8899. We've got a question here. What BP reading is considered low blood pressure, and what kind of problems can low BP cause?
Right. So, to be honest, I wouldn't be so worried about low blood pressure, because there is always that saying, how low is low. I'd rather stress on how high a blood pressure would you be worried about. So let me just put it in that any values above 140/90 would warrant certain, you might well be thinking whether you have hypertension. Now, if you have lowish blood pressure and you feel quite fine and you've checked with a doctor and he or she say that's fine, then it's okay. But then if you have a kind of a lowish blood pressure, then if you have symptoms, for example, you feel giddy upon standing, you don't feel well, you're losing blood, you're not getting enough fluids, then of course then there is some concern. So I really cannot give a number to low blood pressure, but it really comes about knowing what's your regular blood pressure over time. Someone who's smaller in size might have lower blood pressure compared to someone who's bigger physically.
Mm. So unlike high blood pressure, there's no actual threshold
value
for the readings.
Yep,
it depends then on symptoms, how you're feeling, how it's affecting you.
Yes.
Okay. You mentioned body mass index before the break, BMI, as part of the initial checkup that a doctor should do before deciding on what kinds of tests you may need in this checkup. So we have a question here that was recorded about BMI.
My name is Dominic. So I did a health checkup last year, and one of the things they check is your BMI. But at the same time, I've also been hearing some people say that BMIs aren't always the best indicators, that it's a bit of a myth. So I'd just be curious to hear, you know, how accurate or good of an indicator of one's health is BMI?
Okay, so I know it's recorded, but thank you, Dominic, for giving that question. Because actually, BMI is very important. It's all linked to obesity. Once someone is obese, then that person is at higher risk of having cardiovascular diseases and certain other conditions. But as I mentioned earlier, hypertension, diabetes, it's very common in Malaysia. So when once you have either one of these, you tend to have them as a group. So when you check your height and weight, which is it's very easy to remember, it's how much you weight over your height squared. So kg over meter squared, you all can actually calculate it or use an online calculator. So when you know your BMI, then you can classify yourself either you're underweight, normal, overweight, or obese. Now, someone in the overweight or obese categories certainly have a higher risk of, for example, getting diabetes and getting high blood pressure. And when you actually work on your weight, because you can't work on your height, yeah? So to change the equation, you just need to change your weight. So if you reduce your weight, your BMI comes down, and in a way, it reduces the risk of getting those conditions. A very simple and something very easy to understand is knee pain, because we do have, especially the obese people who complain of pain in both knees. So when you work on because your knees would be taking on your body weight. So if you cut down your weight and you reduce the pressure and the strain on your knees, then the pain in the knees might go off faster. Yeah, so BMI is actually very important.
Mm. But Nash is pointing out on WhatsApp, what if somebody is super muscular and, heavier in that sense, then your BMI would actually go up.
Well, very true. We have other indicators. We have the waist circumference as well that comes into the equation. Of course, your physique would matter. Someone with, biceps and whatever the muscles that you worked up, of course your weight will go up. But then again, it's monitoring your BMI over time as well. And as I mentioned before, your family history and lifestyle and so on and so forth. So it's a combination of many factors, really, Xiao-Ek. It's just not one thing by itself.
And I like the fact that Nash brought this up, and it shows that, with the kind of knowledge listeners like Nash and others have, yep, it becomes a discussion with their doctor, doesn't it? And then they can point out these things and ask more questions as well.
Very true. By the very fact that he says, for someone muscular, you don't develop muscle by just sitting down. That means this person has been working out, has been exercising, has been keeping, active. And that's a good indicator by itself, physical activity, because if you have a sedentary lifestyle, also that adds up to your risk of getting cardiovascular diseases. I keep on repeating cardiovascular disease because it's still the number one killer in the country.
Mm. And Ong is asking, how do I increase my white blood cell count? And I know this is one of the things that is measured in a blood panel as well.
Okay, it's very interesting because you don't actually want to have very high white blood cell count. If we look at the test results, you're looking for the numbers between 4 and 11. They've got other units as well, but just let's take it at that, 4 to 11. Now, white blood cells will go up if your body there's some infection going on, because your white blood cells are like your soldiers. They're fighting an infection. There's also, I wouldn't want to say it, but there are also blood cancers that, that the white cells will go very, very high when that happens. So you don't want to raise up beyond what is normal limits.
So then what is the point of measuring it in a blood test? What does it tell us?
Okay. So as I mentioned before, a full blood count, which measures essentially your hemoglobin, your white cell, and your platelets, will be looking out for abnormal conditions that exist with this condition. Now, when you have low white cell count, it somehow points out towards the question of whether your bone marrow is producing enough blood. So then we look at the other two blood cells, the other two lines. Now, if suddenly, through all the three parameters go down, then we start be looking for something else. But really, someone have low blood cells, usually they may have symptoms. So white blood cell is not something we are really looking for in a screening test. There are other parameters that we look for more importantly.
And you mentioned cancer, so I want to bring up a couple of questions we got on Instagram. Mei Yin asked, my gastro CA marker is in the 50s. Is this something serious, something to be worried about?
Okay. So the first question I would ask her is, why was the test done in the first place? If she was already having a gastro condition, for example, she already has some cancer in the GI tract, the gastrointestinal tract, then it's warranted to do such tumor marker, because then that tumor marker will be higher, will go up if the tumor is acting up. But if she has no cancer in the gastrointestinal tract, then really that tumor marker might not be warranted in the first place. There are many conditions that gives rise to false positive. That means not necessarily because of cancer, but other conditions that's happening in the body that happens to make that test higher than usual. So again, I stress on the importance of, you know, doing tests with your doctor's advice.
Would you say that for the purpose of general preventive kind of screening, we shouldn't be looking at tumor markers at all?
I would say yes, because tumor markers really are not meant to screen. I know they are on many profiles and we can't really do much at our end, but it really makes things a bit more complicated because, for example, let's just say, for the sake of discussion, the higher limit of that tumor marker is 50 and you get a value of 51, you know, and it gets highlighted. So the question is, oh, what do I do with this value of 51? Do I really have to work out, you know, to do more tests? Do I need to have scope done? Do I need to have x-rays? Do I need to have CT scans, you know, to look for this? But as I said, there are many reasons for false positives. So tumor markers, I would really say it's not necessary if you do not have symptoms, you are not having the condition already. So yes, so that's how it is.
But rather, if you have been diagnosed with cancer, it is something you do as part of your treatment and monitoring your progress.
Definitely. If you've already been diagnosed, if there is suspicion of such condition, then you would do CEA, CA125, CA199, you know, all those tumor markers that have all those numbers. So I would say but let's say you've got it done and you're just really wondering what it is, then bring that results to a doctor and ask her or him to explain it to you.
All right.
That might be another choice to do.
But so many people are worried about cancer, right? So you know, Sid was here too, is asking, you know, then, you know, we are concerned. If we're not, for instance, somebody who perhaps doesn't go for regular checkups. And then also at the same time, you know, tumor marker tests are not recommended for general health screening. So then how do we identify if we could be at risk of cancer? And to add to that, on WhatsApp, somebody is asking also, you know, many cancers are silent if there are no symptoms. Right. Yeah. So how do we identify early?
So again, let's go to this principles of screening. We tend to screen for diseases that are common in a population. So certain diseases are commoner in Malaysia, for example. Certain conditions don't exist that commonly in Malaysia. So let's take cancer. Let's take cancer of the colon. Yeah, colon cancer. Very common in Malaysia. So therefore, we kind of have a screening program for colon cancer. So whether you're a male or whether you're a female, go back to your family history. Now, let's say you have no family members with cancer, and you're still quite young, let's say you're 30 years old, there's really no need to screen for colon cancer. Again, let's say you don't have family members with cancer, but you're 55, let's say. So we classify you as having an average risk of colon cancer. Then we would say, all right, then you need to do a fecal occult blood test. Basically, what it means is you give a sample of your feces and we look for blood inside it, inside your stool sample. So that's to be done annually. Now, let's change the scenario a bit. Let's say your parents have got colon cancer. So again, that puts you at risk of having colon cancer. Then in that case, then you need to do it slightly earlier than 50 years old, you know, perhaps on 40 or To put it more complicated, it's 10 years before that person was diagnosed. Yeah. So then you would do more frequently and, as I would say, earlier than usual. Now, the other cancers that are that's very common in Malaysia would be cervical cancer and breast cancer in women. So I can't go without talking about breast cancer. So breast cancer, extremely common in Malaysia. And again, it goes into risk factors. So if you have your sister or your mother or even, you know, your relatives with breast cancer, it puts you at higher risk than someone else. Even if you do not have a family member, then at one point in your life, you need to start screening for breast cancer. Okay. So sometimes we advocate women to do self-breast examination. Now that's not really doesn't really go for a screening for breast cancer. That's more of for you being aware of you know, presence of breast lumps. But we're talking about doing a mammogram. So mammogram, certainly for women with risks, then you would want to start it earlier. But even if you have no risk, then perhaps over 50 for women, it's advocated to do one. Now, cervical cancer. Cervical cancer, again, very common and can be easily picked up if it's an early stage. And I think most women, or I hope most women, are familiar with the test called pap smear. Certainly, if you've gotten pregnant and you've gone to, you know, for your routine checkup, certainly the doctor or the nurses would recommend having a pap smear. So for a pap smear, you don't, as long as you're sexually active, then you need a pap smear. So generally, we would say you're 25 years above or 3 years after you first start having sex, then you need to have a pap smear. How often? Not every year. We can start off with once every 2-3 years and then go on doing it regularly. And we stop doing pap smear generally when you're 70. So an 80-year-old woman might not need to have a pap smear. But certainly, if you're 30s, 40s, go have your pap smear done regularly. It's fairly easy. It's not that uncomfortable.
Yeah. Coming back to the mammogram, how often should that be?
Not very often. It depends if, again, on your risk factors. Yeah. So certainly if someone have got high risk, maybe even every 2-3 years or less often than that. Again, goes to your risk factors. And again, I would push people to have a regular doctor to know your health status. Yeah.
Absolutely. We'll continue with the questions for Associate Professor Dr. Nick Sherina Hanafi, primary care physician. After this break, we are discussing health checkups, and you are welcome to send all your questions regarding health checkups and screening tests over to us so that Dr. Sherina can address them. The number to call is 03-7733-2900, or if you'd like to WhatsApp 018-789-8899, you can also tweet us at BFM Radio. A few more questions to address when we come back from this break. So stay tuned to Health and Living, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Shaoik, and my guest, Associate Professor Dr. Nick Sherina Hanafi, primary care physician. It's our open clinic show about health checkups. Whatever that you've been wondering, if you have any doubts, whether you need to go for one, or maybe you've been for some and you're just not sure what to do next. Any questions at all, we welcome them. 03-7733-2900 is the number you can call. You can also WhatsApp 018-789-8899. And before the break, Dr. Sherina, you reiterated again why it's important for everyone to have a regular doctor who knows their medical history, personal history, family history, right? And it is that wealth of information that you can use with your doctor to make an informed decision about what kind of checkups you might need. But here's a question that we had recorded about, well, finding the right doctor.
My name is Sean, and my question is, with so many options to like look for GPs and kind of being like spoiled for choice, where should somebody start to find the right GP for themselves?
Okay, thanks, Sean. There's no magic answer to that. It really depends on, I would say, if you have come across a doctor you're comfortable with, that's a good person to stick with. Another would be locality, somewhere near to you. You wouldn't want to travel 2 hours just to get to your doctor. So either somewhere near your house or somewhere near your workplace. Again, a panel doctor might work as well. If your company has got medical benefits at a certain clinic, then you could stick to, you know, to that clinic and find a doctor that you like. So it's really getting to know which ones you're comfortable with. You could ask a friend, a family member, someone you know they're comfortable with, and start from there. But any general practitioner would be more than capable to do health screenings.
Okay. We've got a question here that's perhaps a bit more specific, but some general guidance might be useful, I think. So the listener is saying, I've got a pain in my lower right abdomen. There are sharp spasms that radiate to the back. And this listener has actually seen a gastro. And there's suspicion that it might be inflammation of the lymph nodes on the mesentery. But, you know, I'm just looking for, you know, some guidance what to do next. Is there a certain specialist that I should see?
Okay, so the fact that this person is having some pain already says that you're having a symptom. So I really cannot give a diagnosis over the phone, because to make a diagnosis, a doctor usually needs to question this person, need to examine, and really to come up with a few diagnoses that we're thinking of. But, well, certainly what you're trying to explain, lymph nodes in the mesentery, would be mesenteric adenitis. That's the medical term for it, and it certainly is a condition. But then again, having a symptom and knowing, you know, it doesn't fall for screening or a health checkup. It's you're having a problem, you need a diagnosis. A gastroenterologist certainly would be capable of making such a diagnosis, of treating you. Then again, if the symptom doesn't go away, I would strongly advocate to go back to that same doctor rather than shop around. Somehow I think Malaysians love to doctor shop, and that leads to a problem, because you know, the problems may change over time, and the second doctor may not know what the first doctor had done. So go back to that same doctor and say, look, I'm not getting better. Is there something else that I need to have done? You know, so the same doctor might you know, going back to the same doctor might help.
And on that note, is there any need to seek a second opinion for the results that we get from our health screening?
Okay, so again, it depends on the trust and the comfort that you have with the first person who kind of gives you the explanation. If he or she could explain very well, then I would say, no, there probably is no need. But it is your right to have a second opinion. We can't stop you from going to another doctor or another. But then again, as they say, too many cooks spoil the broth, right? So you may get, I don't doubt it, that you may get different explanation for different conditions. So I would stick to one and see what happens.
So James is asking, they say diabetes is the mother of all diseases, and that high blood sugar is the problem. James wants to know, how exactly does high sugar affect our systems in the body and cause so many other diseases?
Okay. So it depends whether I want to give a short answer or a long answer. So yes, in a way, diabetes is the mother of diseases, because once you have diabetes, it puts you at what we call as very high risk of cardiovascular diseases. Now, diabetes is just not straightforward sugar in your blood, but it affects your blood vessels. It affects the small blood vessels. It affects the big blood vessels. So as you can imagine, the distance of blood vessels we have in our body we have many, many, many blood vessels. So diabetes can cause you to have complications in your brain, in your heart, in your feet, in your nerves, in your kidneys, literally every part of your body. And that's because of the changes that happens when you have higher blood glucose than normal. What essentially happens is, your body cannot utilize the glucose that you take in. Yeah, there's something wrong with your receptors in your body or whatever reason. So the glucose, the sugar, all remains in your blood. That's why we call it, you know, diabetes. And it goes out through your urine. But essentially, your body, your cells in the body cannot get that sugar. So it's kind of like a mixing. You have you've got so much blood, so much sugar in your blood, but it cannot be utilized.
Yep. And Ling is asking, okay, this is an interesting one. I think a lot of people have Ling's experience. I just went for an exercise ECG because there was a promotion. That does sound familiar. The results were good, but I had read after that that patients can get a heart attack, you know, following doing an ECG. So Ling wants to know, is it a good idea to do an ECG if you are actually perfectly healthy?
So you're talking about stress ECG?
Let's assume exercise ones, the ones you do on the treadmill, right? Yeah.
Right. So ECG stands for electrocardiogram. And as an ECG per se is when you lie down and you've got all these wires on your chest and they look at the pattern of your heart, of the heartbeat and so on and so forth. So when we suspect that you're having heart condition, we send you for a stress test. That means you still have the wires on your chest. You put on your track shoes and you run on the treadmill. So we start off with very slow and going upwards. And if for your age and you can reach a certain stage and your heart is still beating well, that's fine. We say you've got a good stress test result. But let's say at a certain part in your heart starts beating erratically, you start having changes in the wave patterns, then we might stop you and say, okay, then you stop and we'll go on to do other tests. Now, when someone undergoes a stress test, there is always a doctor on standby. There is always, what we call as emergency standby, because that test itself might make you feel uncomfortable and you might need medical care. So when you ask me whether it's after the stress test, I'm not so sure whether you mean immediately after or weeks or months later, because the stress test per se is not very invasive. There's nothing injected into you. There's no wires put into your body. So the test itself is quite it's quite harmless. It's like running around the park or something like that. Mm. Yes.
Well, if it comes back to why would you need a stress test, right? A stress ECG. And those are dependent on the risk factors that you may have that are increased.
Yeah, for example, let's say you do have family history, you do have a bit of chest pain, but not very classical. And that happened maybe days ago and now you're fine. And we do a resting ECG and that looks fine as well. But you've got other risk factors, so we're not quite sure what to do. So we need to stress your heart, really. Okay, let it work and see what happens if it's under stress. Mm. And if we see changes, then we suspect, okay, then perhaps you need to do an angiogram next. Because an angiogram is what we call as invasive. You're putting in a wire into your heart. You're putting in dye into your blood vessel. So compared to a stress test, an angiogram is more invasive. So we do something less invasive first.
Another question. There are a lot of clinics that offer ultrasound to check the whole body. What does this do? Do we need this?
Okay. Ultrasound to look at. Ultrasound will show what is structurally in your body. Yeah, it will tell you the size of your liver. It will tell you the size of your kidney. A short answer to that, if there's nothing wrong, then you don't need it because things are working out fine. But let's say for a woman, you're having heavy periods. And, one of the common reasons for heavy periods would be having a fibroid. So we want to know. So we immediately do a scan and we can see whether the fibroid is big or not, There are many other reasons. For example, we suspect you of having kidney stones, for example. So we do a scan to look for stones. So a short answer is you do not need the scan if you're quite well.
Yes. When we put up the question on Twitter asking people if they think it's necessary to go for a medical checkup every year, like I said, more than 80% voted yes. But a lot of people also commented, it's too expensive. I can't afford it. I would only go if my company, bears it or allows me to claim it under medical expenses. So I guess, on the one hand, yes, it's an expense, but, are there affordable options perhaps that people can consider?
I would say yes, Shoaik, because for example, if my concern right now, I'm still quite young, I'm 30 years old, for example, and I only have, let's say I have diabetes in the family. So I may not need all the other tests that's being carried out in a package. So I may just go to the doctor and say, look, I just want to do a glucose test. I just want to do what's necessary. So you might just need to have your blood pressure checked. You might just need your blood sugar, and you might need to have your cholesterol, let's say, the basic minimum. Yeah. So that might not be as costly as a package. The reason why they have packages, it's so much easier to do, like you said in the beginning of the show, you know, kitchen sink and everything, you know, you get everything in one go. But really, there are cheaper options.
Mm. We had recorded a question about supplements, I think, that a lot of people are interested to know as well. So let's have a listen.
My name is Amirul Zulkifli, and my question is about, can you explain the importance of taking supplements and maybe how to choose the right one for you?
Okay, Amirul, that's a good question. Now, generally, if you are eating a healthy, balanced diet, you would not need any supplements generally, yeah? Let's say you're well and you eat breakfast, lunch, dinner, you have your 5 servings of fruits and vegetables, you're not, you know, you have... Well, Malaysia's got enough sunshine to give you vitamin D, etc. Then I would say you would not need any supplements. But then again, let's say you have certain conditions whereby you have osteoporosis, for example, then you may need calcium supplements. Maybe you want to increase certain... maybe vitamin C, then if you want to, you believe that vitamin C increases your immunity, then you may want to add it. But then again, if you're well, you're healthy, a balanced meal would serve you much better than having supplements.
Mm. I've heard it said that if you're taking vitamin C when you don't need it, it's going to come out as very expensive urine.
Yes, very much so. Because if you look at the doses of vitamin C in different kinds of brands, then you will see that they ranges from very low to 1,000 milligrams. You know, that's a lot, and you may be oversaturating your kidneys, definitely.
All right. Our very last question that we have time for, very quickly, if you could, Dr. Srina, how do I differentiate between foam and bubble in the urine? This is from a listener.
That's a very good question. Now, first of all, you should not have either foam or bubble. Yeah. Foams are foams and bubbles are bubbles, but generally they should not be there. So it pays to look at how your urine is. Once you pee in the toilet bowl, then it should just be clear. I don't think you can. It's not that important to differentiate foam or bubble. It's either if you have either one. Yeah. It's also like stools. Get in the habit of looking at your stool, because it should not be black. You know, unless you're taking iron tablets, then it would be black. But look at your stools, look at your urine, so that it's all part of you, you know, so be comfortable with that.
All right. Yes. A final message then, and I will use a listener's question to wrap up. Sarah asked on Instagram, so for anyone who's starting to go for their first checkup, for instance, what's the best advice for them?
Okay, know your family history. Yeah. Know, is it your aunt? Is it your paternal aunt? You know, your grandmother? What conditions do you have? Because those are automatic conditions that put you at risk of certain conditions. Yeah. So generally have a good consultation with a doctor where he or she can evaluate what you are at risk of, and then take it from there and see, oh, you need to have this and you have that. So it's better to start early than later. Certainly when you're more than, even when you're 20, there's already conditions that you could go for screening.
So you're never too young, actually, to start.
You're never too young, no.
All right.
But we didn't even get to talk about, for those who are elderly, about 65, there are many more conditions to screen for that age group, but perhaps another
yes,
session.
Then we'll definitely do another show with you, Associate Professor
yes,
Dr. Nick Sherina Hanafi, a primary care physician, answering all your questions about going for health checkups. And yes, if the questions are still coming in, we'll get her in to answer more, a part two. Thank you so much. You've been listening to Health and Living, BFM 89.9.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.